Four Quarter Friday. We are handing out some pennants this week because in girls soccer, boys soccer, softball, baseball, all across the state, we are crowning state champions. I'm Matt Smith. That is Rob Williams, posted up in the HD Law Studios. Fun show ahead because we just have one guest today, but it's a good one. And the reason we're doing that is because we absolutely want to make sure we spend a little time telling you about some of the state championships that have already been earned, the champions that have been crowned. But we will have Austin Alexander join us a little bit later from Diamond Prospects, where on the Leading Edge guest line, where we're going to talk about what he has seen recently. He has been a part of things at Duncan Park, where Dorman is on its way to the state championship. They knocked off Spartan High in a three-game series. He's been there for some AC Florida action. He's been there for the epic comeback for River Bluff over James Island. So Austin Alexander has put his eyes on a lot, and we're going to talk to him about some of the big-time players and big-time games that he has seen. This is the First Quarter. That is Rob Williams, the First Quarter presented by Bill Maloney, Farm Bureau Insurance. You can reach out to Bill at 803-637-6246. Rob has done that. Rob is fully insured. Everything you see Rob wearing is insured by Bill Maloney. Rob, I know you're exhausted. That's why I wanted to talk for a while to open up. You've been all over the state. You've been covering football. You've been checking out baseball games. And then you were trying to catch up on everything that was happening in track and boys soccer and girls soccer. So we appreciate all the hard work. Now get some coffee, relax, and we can just kind of like talk about it for a minute.
Well, good morning, Smitty. It's good to be here. It's great when we're on the air and we get to talk about these things. I enjoy the games more than anything, but this is special when we get to sit down and really break things down and look at the scope of what's happening. And I don't want to pat myself on the back or call you out, but you did leave out softball, who I've also had an eye on this
week. Oh, you've been to the softball games. Okay.
Well, you know, one of these points that we would say, and I think you brought it up last week and we'll probably talk about it again, is certain programs mm-hmm. are having success across the board. So in some cases, like in the case of AC Flora, you have an opportunity to check out multiple teams with the girls soccer team in the state championship, softball in the state championship, baseball in the state championship. There's still a lot of action happening on that campus if you walk over there. And as you know, some of these high school campuses across the state are now sprawling and have these big athletic complexes. But due to the landlocked nature of that school, AC Flora is kind of compacted. You can stand in one place. I was there a couple of weeks ago. I stood in one spot and I heard the national anthem three times in the course of 30 minutes because of three different games getting going. So, I've seen a little bit of everything this week. It's been a lot of fun. The football stuff is definitely noteworthy. But to start things off, obviously we have championships and we have upper state and lower state. We have state champions in soccer already. So it's been a whirlwind. But that's May for you. It's spring sport playoff time.
Yeah. And you're right. I've been there over to AC Florida. I experienced the same thing. I know exactly what you mean because you're standing there and the first time I went, I wasn't sure which direction to walk because I heard noises in both directions. They were playing softball and baseball at the same time. It's okay. Beautiful school, beautiful campus. Andy Hallett's swan song there, and they are making a run. We'll get back to baseball in just a minute, but let's make sure everybody's up to date, and you'll stay up to date if you are subscribed to our YouTube channel, because every morning Rob has been doing the Four Quarter Friday minute, morning minute, and giving updates on everybody that is moving on in the playoffs and also being crowned a state champion. So let's talk about boys soccer first. We'll just go in the order that I have it on my notes. In Class A, Hardeeville has defeated Dixie, and a name that you're going to hear a little bit more often. Academic Magnet wins the 2A Boys Soccer Championship. They defeated Buford. That took place yesterday. But Academic Magnet, one of those schools, Rob, you said that you're going to, you know, the schools that are kind of having a run, having their moment, that's one of them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. When you have, we'll see it here in just a moment. But obviously, you mentioned the Boys Championship in 2A for Academic Magnet. If you flip things to the girls' side, They won it as well, Smitty. in the Class A2A Academic Magnet Championship over Andrew Jackson yesterday. So you get a boys' championship and you get a girls' championship in soccer for Academic Magnet. You know, it's another one of those things. We just mentioned AC Flora. You mentioned Academic Magnet. We'll get to a couple other schools here in a minute. Oceanside is one. Chapin is one. Eastside is one that you're going to see continually show up in some of these results as they stand right now today. So, yeah, it's interesting to see kind of where things fall in different times of the year. It's
yeah.
And so these spring sports, certain schools are going to be stronger in these spring sports. Certain schools are going to be stronger when we obviously we everybody knows about what happens in football, and we can talk about that day in and day out. We get into the winter sports. You see some of the same schools showing up. What's interesting to me, Smitty, and I'll kind of tease a summer conversation for us, is let's take a look at the whole calendar year and see can we score it up and see which schools are the most successful across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, there, obviously we have population shifts. You have, you know, sometimes there's a run of good athletes that are excel in multiple sports, you know, and then you say, oh, well, you know, it makes sense. You could, I remember, you know, there was a run of athletes back in the day at Gaffney, you know, like Sidney Rice and AZ Reed were playing multiple sports. Oh, well, okay. Roscoe Crosby was starring at Union in both baseball and football. And so you have runs like that. And sometimes it's due to one family too. Hello, Little John's in Gaffney.
Exactly. So, I was about to say the same thing.
Yeah. Sometimes it's due to one family. Okay. And 3A. So now we've got, if you go to the soccer pitch, you've got some championships that are going to be happening today, which is pretty cool because all of this is happening right around graduations for these schools.
Absolutely.
And now they're going to turn their attention. Hey, well, let's leave it with a title. So in 3A today, it's Powdersville and Oceanside. I don't know. Could there be two schools playing for a state championship that are further from each other? That's pretty far. You know, sometimes you get these rivalries. Or, you know, sometimes if you've got two teams from the Midlands, it's not that far. But Powdersville, in our northwest corner of South Carolina, nestled over there, like Oconee and everything, and on the way to Georgia. And then Oceanside, which is down in the Mount Pleasant area. So that's a long trip. I don't even know who's hosting that one. But Powdersville meets Oceanside today for a state championship in 3A. Boys soccer.
It's definitely one of those situations where somebody's traveling. A long way, you know what I mean? And you can try to work things out with these types of situations. But sometimes as we know with like a baseball series where you're gonna go back and forth, sometimes that becomes quite a haul for these teams going back and forth
from one to another. I want to talk about baseball series in a minute. Meaning series themselves.
Yep.
Okay. We'll do that, you know, the ebb and flow. Which you don't often get in high school, right? I mean, listen, we love high school football season, but it's always the one and done situation. But in baseball, it's so fascinating when these three games are going back and forth and watching the ebb and flow and watching also the coaches of these baseball teams have to measure out the strategy as well, knowing they might have to come back and win another game on the road or in a neutral site. All right. We'll get to that in a few minutes. In 4A, it's Southside Christian and Gray Collegiate in boys soccer meeting for the title today. Tomorrow, you have both your 5A boys soccer championships being decided tomorrow. Clover and Wando. That's another one. It's a pretty good trip for somebody. Clover and Wando.
That's definitely a trip right there.
And I love our people in Clover, but, you know, Clover's not the easiest place to get to. I covered a few football games up there.
And we're adding like Wiley next year, which will be just a couple minutes further. You know, Clover is splitting next year, and the new school, Lake Wiley High School, will open in the fall. Another one for us to follow, Smitty. But yeah, that one's right up on the edge over by the lake. So
right up by the lake.
On the tip of the state.
Good luck getting cell service there. I always lose cell service at Chapin, too. Clover and Wando, 5A Division I boys soccer, and it's Eastside and Chapin meeting in Division II. Those two games, both those 5A games, are tomorrow. In girls soccer, we mentioned that Academic Magnet got a girls championship in soccer, defeating Andrew Jackson. Oceanside look, they're a monster. Got to give them their love. In 3A girls soccer, Oceanside defeated St. Joseph's for their sixth title in a row. Freshman Sarah Lagon scored twice in a 4-0 victory. But that's not even the most impressive thing. Oceanside outscored its opponents 37-0, held all their opponents scoreless, and scored 37 goals in the playoff run on the way to a sixth straight title. That's a monopoly. They have that monopolized. In 4A, you talk about teams that are on a run, Rob. AC Flora and Bishop England will meet 4A girls soccer today. But AC Flora, we were just talking about, you said you heard three national anthems. The Falcons are flying across all spring sports.
They are. They are. And that'll be quite the matchup. I talked with some other soccer coaches around the state this week who, when looking at the matchup between AC Flora and Bishop England, I saw eyes pop. Like, ooh, that's gonna be an interesting showdown, because as much faith as they had and as impressed as they were with AC Flora when they got the news that it was Bishop England on the other side, they knew what type of opponent AC Flora was going to be going up against. You could see it in the face of these coaches who have seen both of these programs. So, you know, that's definitely one to watch. And like we've said, AC Flora with three teams in state championships, I'll be interested to see how many trophies they bring home. As we already mentioned, Academic Magnet with two, Oceanside with an opportunity to get a few, Indian Land on the diamond, potentially.
Yep.
Opportunity to get a couple. So it'll be interesting to see how many trophies are actually taken home by some of these schools that are making deep runs.
That's right. Indian Land, very impressive right now. Softball, baseball. Absolutely. On the dirt, Indian Land is cruising. 5A Division I girls soccer, Jailman and Wando. Wando a power there. And that game is taking place tomorrow. I know it's a match. It's a game. It's a match tomorrow. And in Division II, it's Eastside and Chapin. Same matchup as the boys. So the girls tomorrow are playing. So the girls and boys, it's Eastside, Chapin, both tomorrow.
And if you look at that, Smitty, in the 5A Division I, it's Wando. So three out of four 5A teams are the same on the boys' side and the girls' side here. So the only difference that you have there is Wando matches up with Clover in the boys' game, and then it's JL Man for the girls' match. So, yeah, three out of four. You talk about dominance in soccer, there's three programs right there.
And as we get to softball, reminder, we are presented by the South Carolina Athletic Coaches Association. We're going to celebrate these coaches. We're going to celebrate these players throughout today. Austin Alexander coming up in a few minutes from Diamond Prospects. We'll talk about everything he's put his eyes on. And then we'll also just talk about some of the players that are still remaining that are going to be playing for baseball state championships. You know, by the way, big games last night, big games tonight, big games tomorrow all across the diamond. And in softball, championship matchups, 4A, AC Flora, and Gray Collegiate. Now, see, that's one. There's no travel there. That's a lot shorter. That's a lot closer for everybody. AC Flora and Gray Collegiate. That's one, you know, the grandparents can get to both games. 5A Division I, it's Burns and Somerville. Boy, those are two names you've just heard over the years, though, right? They're back in state championships. This time it's in softball. Indian Land and St. James, 5A Division II state championship in softball. So Indian Land is, again, doing so well in baseball under Hal Bagwell, and, of course, doing so well on the softball diamond as well. Your baseball state championship matchups. Here's what we know, and then we'll get to a break, and we'll have Austin Alexander join us. McBee is playing Latta. Latta, the Fighting Phil Kornblutes. I'll text Korn after the show about Latta making the base. He played baseball at Latta and hit a home run at Green Sea Floyd's that he talks about all the time.
That's similar to J.C. Sherbert's six dingers at D.R. Hill in middle school.
Yeah. Okay. J.C. Sherbert, he looks like a power guy. Okay. Yeah. 2A, Clennon plays Atlantic Collegiate in baseball. In 3A, it's Southside Christian and Oceanside. As you said, we're going to hear some of the same names. Oceanside is one of them. 4A, AC Flora and Andy Hallett and his swan song he's looking for an eighth state championship. They're already in the state championship, waiting the winner of Airport and Hartsville. They'll play game three tomorrow. They had a classic last night, a back and forth battle between the Red Foxes and the Eagles last night. AC Flores in. They had a 13-4 win over Wren last night. Corey Fravel from Diamond Prospects was there. We'll talk to him off air, and we'll be sure to bring you all the info on that. Charlie Scott was 3-4, by the way, with a double and a triple. Dorman is in and will play either River Bluff or James Island. Game three is tonight. That's the game. That's where we're going to start with Austin Alexander in just a moment, because he was in place. River Bluff fell behind James Island 9-0. James Island, superpower, the Leviathan, Hercules, Samson from the lower part of the state. River Bluff was down 9-0, didn't fold, battled back. Coach Bennett, we're going to talk to him, you know, in the coming weeks at some point about that game specifically. And in 5A Division II, it's Chapin facing either Indian Land or T.L. Hanna. Those two clubs played a classic last night. They were scoreless through eight innings, but the Yellow Jackets came away with a 3-2 win in nine innings. Went to two extra innings. There was no score. Two aces were going back and forth. It was like Sandy Koufax and Bob Gibson. And then in the end, T.L. Hanna comes away with the win. So great action across all of these series. And some of these state championships have been decided. Some will be decided today. Some will be decided 24 hours from now. It's had us kind of chatting off air a lot, because there's a lot of cool things. Every time you learn something or I learn something, we kind of call each other.
Absolutely. I know we're up against a break here, and I can take us out in just after this. But how about T.L. Hanna and the way that they have run through this bracket? You know, you look at somebody like Indian Land, you expect that team to be there based on what we've seen throughout the year. But you talk about some surprises. We had some surprises across the playoffs in baseball, and T.L. Hanna for me is one of those nice surprises that's still in this thing battling.
That's right. I think Clinton and Atlantic Collegiate, they have a combined record of like 54-6.
Yeah.
That was a collision course. But you're right. We didn't talk about Christian
and Oceanside, same
deal. That's right. You can see it coming. We expected it. As a matter of fact, we were talking about that matchup 3 weeks ago, that it was potentially that should be, you know, that's like the two favorites coming together, old Bulls Lakers from the 80s. And then in 5A Division II, I wasn't talking about T.L. Hanna. I don't know that we mentioned T.L. Hanna. Apologies. They're showing me. So tip of the cap to T.L. Hanna, and they have fought their way, as you said, the hard way. We can go over this with Austin Alexander, how tough it is to fight your way through the playoffs when you're not one of the top seeds, and T.L. Hanna was not, having to go through a play-in series and go on the road and all of that. They've got a chance to make the state championship. Chapin's already waiting on the winner of Indian Land, T.L. Hanna. We'll take a break. When we come back, Austin Alexander, Diamond Prospects, joins us. He was at Duncan Park last night for Dorman and Spartanburg. We'll start there next.
Check the State Line High School scoreboard every Friday night on the Chief Sports app.
Welcome back to Four Quarter Friday, part of the Chief Sports Network. Let's talk ball.
Matt Smith, Rob Williams, surrounding, bookending Austin Alexander from Diamond Prospects. Austin, we've got the River Bluff James Island series to talk about. We've got all of the great prospects that I want to talk to you about, because you actually highlighted somebody that's uncommitted as a senior last night that somebody needs to jump on. We'll get to that. But first, let's start where you were last night. I've got it behind me. Duncan Park. And before we get to Dorman and Spartanburg and the players on the field, I want to hear your story about Duncan Park, because you grew up not far from there. I grew up not far from there. It's a special place. I remember the Marlboro Man in right center field. How many times did you take the bump and pitch at Duncan Park?
First of all, good to join you guys. And yeah, that place behind you, I can see it in the background. I spent about 7 hours there last night. That lightning delay was a real treat. But I tell you what, if I'm going to have to experience a two-hour lightning delay, there's no better ballpark to to relive some memories for myself in the Duncan Park. Not only did I grow up in that ballpark, so did my dad, literally across the street, that big parking lot that was full last night. He lived on the other side of it, beside the church, and my grandfather grew up in that ballpark. So that ballpark is a very storied ballpark for the Alexander family, for sure. I got to play in there a little bit. Spartanburg Legion played there when I played American Legion ball. Got a chance to coach there as much as I got a chance to play there. Of course, when I played at Spartanburg Methodist and coached, we played at Duncan Park. Was able to be a part of Coach Wallace's first run to Grand Junction. We were able to clinch on that field as well back in 2001, take his first team to Grand Junction. So, yeah, lots of really good memories of that ballpark. In fact, when I drove in, I know I went down the little cart path behind right field that you're not supposed to drive on, but I wanted to go around there and see if the Marlboro man was still laying behind the wall. He is not, but they cleaned up that area behind there. I remember searching for foul balls and home run balls. They cleaned out that area, and boy, it's just a legendary ballpark. And went there for a ball game last night, and the place was packed. And it was an interesting ball game, to say the least.
Yeah. So let's get to that one, and then we'll get to the classic you saw on Wednesday night between River Bluff and James Island. But quickly, Dorman kind of did what it does last night. Palmer Hornick and company. And so they're on their way to the state championship. They'll await the winner of James Island and River Bluff. But take a moment, if you would, take us through what you saw from Spartan High, because we've got to give them a lot of credit. They had a tough, tough region to fight out of, and then a tough bracket to fight through just to get to this point. And they took Dorman to the final game. Last night didn't go well for them, but took them to the final game. So tell us what you saw between Spartanburg and Dorman. And feel free to highlight any players, because that's your specialty. We love to celebrate those guys that deserve a little love, that did what they did for both Spartan High and Dorman.
Sure. Yeah, well, Dorman's certainly a juggernaut, and we saw that coming from the very beginning. They're very good. Spartanburg's had this unbelievable run. They finished fourth, I believe, in their region. But their playoff run's been epic, and it came to an end last night, and it was over pretty early. They gave up a four spot in the first inning. The sophomore starter was having a little trouble finding the zone, and then of course when in the zone, Dorman can find barrels as well, and so they were spraying around the park, and one thing led to another. There ended up being Spartanburg ended up having to parade nine different arms to the mound in what turned out to be a 5-inning game. For Spartanburg, Charlie McCrory had a couple of hits. Weren't a lot of bright spots, though, for the Vikings. It was a little bit of everything. There were a lot of mound visits. There were a lot of questionable calls that created a scrum with the umpires and, of course, coaches. A little bit of gamesmanship between the coaches. And, all of that ended up being about after a two-hour rain delay. It never rained. Lightning delay. You had about a 2.5 hour, 5-inning game. So it was, ended up being a 17-1 Dorman victory. Logan McGarity was very good on the mound. Had a little bit of a rough stretch in the first inning after a long top of the first. So keep in mind now, both these pitchers had started up. They were ready when the first lightning delay rained in. So they were ready. We were about probably 8 to 10 minutes away from the first pitch when the first, alarm went off. So both those guys had to ramp up, get ready. And that's never easy for a starting pitcher who is typically very routine oriented to have to back off of the routine, chill out, not know really exactly when you're going to start back. As it turned out to be 2 hours. So they had to, of course, get ready again. And, the long top of the first led to a long wait for McGarity. But after that, he cruised through two, and they threw a couple of relievers behind him in the 5 innings that they ended up playing. So it ended up being a 17-1 ball game. Palmer Hornick's a name that, if you follow baseball in this state at all, certainly in the upstate, the boy, he hits, and he did again last night. He had three more hits, a couple doubles. He did what he does. And of course, a huge supporting cast that they have at Dorman. Austin Rath had a 3-run triple that kind of took a game that looked like it was going sideways and kind of put it out of reach when he cleared the bases in the third inning, I think it was. to kind of put them out in front. And from there, they took care of business and held serve in the fourth and the fifth and threw up zeros. And that was, you know, of course, culminating the celebration behind the mound. And off they go into the, you know, winning the upstate and going on to the state championship series, which I believe is kind of vindictive for them. I think this is the round that they lost in last year. So it's kind of been their battle cry to get back to this point, but of course, get over that hump, and they did last night.
Austin, you know, you talk about the delay and some of the calls that go back and forth. We've seen this a little bit in this playoff run, and we'll kind of get to River Bluff and James Island in just a moment as well. But when you look at all the factors going into the environment last night, Smitty and I mentioned before, some matchups across the playoffs in spring sports cause fans to drive a long way if they want to see the other team. This is not one of them. this is easy access for both teams to be right there at Duncan Park. So how is it impacted by the weather, by the fact that these two teams are common opponents anyway, that may have certain feelings about each other? Could you still feel the energy, or did the weather make an impact where it backed it off?
I think the weather probably did impact it a little bit, just because you're just, you know, at some point when you're sitting there that long, you're starting to decide, you're trying to make a decision on how long am I going to stick this out?
Yeah.
And then of course, but you know, once they finally decided they were going to play, the pitchers had to get ready again. And so maybe it did to some degree. There might've been some people that snuck out the gate, but there might've been some other people who didn't think they could get there in time for a 6 o'clock start and rolled in a little bit later and were able to catch the ball game. But, you know, the crowd was, the place was packed. You know, much of the area down the right field side was full. All of the seating in the lower bowl was full. And I thought it was interesting when I first got there, there was designated seating for Spartanburg here and Dorman there. So, you know, everybody, you stay on your side, cheer for your team and do your thing. Yeah, I'm sure there was some crossover, but yeah, there's no love lost between these teams because they've, I don't want to say they've shared players, but there's some players that have played in both programs recently. And so there's that. And, you know, once you got to get a little bit out of control, you got a little chippy in the stands, but you know what, that's rivalry sports. That's the way it's supposed to be, as people that are passionate about the team, they're there to watch and the kids are there to pull for. And you know, as I sat there and I looked at the designated seating on both sides, you know, I was right in the middle and just, in, you know, there to watch a good ball game. And either way, just, you know, it's cool to see two teams from certainly the county that I grew up in and spent mm-hmm. most of my life in, see both of them. I get a chance to play for an upper state title. There were other options that I had last night. And the way it turned out, I probably could have gotten home a lot sooner and probably seen a little closer ball games. But when I saw that come across and those two on a path to play each other, and I knew that, you know, if my schedule worked out, I was going to be at Duncan Park when they played that game too.
Yeah. And of course, yeah, the setting, everything. Again, the game didn't turn out to be a classic, but it's a classic rivalry. And you mentioned the right field line being full. You know, that's the old Peter Pan family section from when we were kids. That's where all the kids would go play and everything. Austin and I both grew up in Spartanburg County. And so Duncan Park just sends chills to you, especially for a ball player, especially for a guy who was a ball player or got into coaching the way Austin did and scouting and everything else. Austin, let's talk about goosebumps.
I want to talk about that for just a second. As I sat there, I was thinking back to my dad took me there a lot. And I just remember meeting a lot of the players right there. You know, I was doing the lightning delay, sitting in the metal bleachers right beside the bathrooms. And but I was just thinking about all the players that I met over the years. You know, when I was a little kid, looking up to these guys that were probably only 20 or 21 years old at the time, playing for the Spartanburg Phillies. But just a lot of really good memories with my dad and my family being able to play, you know, go to that ballpark, watch other people playing, and then eventually play and coach in it. So yeah, I definitely want to give Duncan Park its due here because that place is certainly a very special place. I'm glad. I appreciate you bringing that up and love seeing that in your background.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, and we could do that. Maybe we'll do that this summer. Talk about all the great ballparks across the state. But because now you get to see them all, Austin, but that one is one that's special, that's going to be special to you because you saw it as a kid and then to see it change. And of course, then for those that don't know, there were, I don't know how many times they've tried to knock Duncan Park down or condemn it or say they no more ball there. And so that's just, it's really cool. That's our Wrigley Field in Spartanburg County, a place that, and Austin, for you to have those, to have celebrations there as well, like you did with SMC, is awesome. But I want to ask, so I mentioned Goosebumps, River Bluff, James Island. James Island is the Godzilla of lower state baseball right now under Matt Spivey. And River Bluff is down 9-0 to that team. That's like Mike Tyson knocking you down twice in the first round. You just, well, I guess this one's over. Maybe we recoup. I'll let you pick it up from there. What happened two nights ago in what must have been one of the greatest baseball games, one of the most fascinating things you've ever witnessed in person, River Bluff and James Island?
Well, much like the game I went to last night, this one appeared to be over early. James Island, as you mentioned, they're just a juggernaut offensively. One through nine, they could find barrels. Obviously, you got the two star-studded guys at the very top of that order. But if you go back to game one, you know, they had five guys not named Ostergaard and Marchand homer in that game. So, you know, obviously it's a very good lineup, and they were finding their barrels with frequency. Early on, they threw up a four spot in the first and then two more, I think, in the second inning. So that one looked over. I mean, it was 6-6-0 before you could really get a good seat in the place. And then it looked like River Bluff was going to mount to come back, or at least get back in the game in the third inning. They get a couple guys on. They have a base running miscue at third base with no outs. And so, of course, that of course, you know, it looked like, well, if you get one or if you get two, maybe you're getting back in a ballgame. Another zero is what it turned out to be. And then James Island comes back at the top of third and scratches three more. So now it's 9-0. And, you know, it's, you know, 2.5 innings into the ballgame. And it just looks like it's that's the way it's going to go. You're not sure if it's going to be, you know, 19 or 29 to nothing. It's just is going that way. River Bluff is playing poorly defensively. And just everything that could go wrong was going wrong. But then, of course, there was one out in the bottom of three. River Bluff gets a couple singles and then a three-run homer by their catcher. And so it's 9-3. But it's still 9-3, and it's the third inning. But because it's the third inning, you realize, you know, there's still some time. You still got – if you can extend the game, because at 9-0, you're starting to think this could be a run-shortened game. And so you may only have 15 outs versus the 21 that you thought you were going to have a chance to play with. So, you know, when you get back to three, you're like, well, maybe we can extend the game and stay in this and get our 21 outs. And, you know, so they throw up the four spot is what it turned out to be in the third. And then they score five. You know, then they get a quick stop. And that's key, of course. When you've got momentum, momentum's not something that you can measure, I don't think, with any kind of metric. But anybody that's been a part of sports knows that it exists. You can feel it. It's real. And so they had a little bit of that. They get a quick stop in the top of four, come back and throw up five in the bottom of the fourth. And so now you've got a 9-9 ball game. And what was, you know, 45 minutes ago, it seemed like it was, you know, pretty much you're going to be out of there pretty quickly. Might be here for a little while. And, you know, of course, when it's 9-9 after four, you know, you realize it may take 20 to win this game. James Island was kind of down on, they'd used their top three arms on in game one on Tuesday. And keep in mind now, all these games that were played last night, Wednesday was supposed to be played on Thursday also. River Bluff's graduation forced that to be a Wednesday game. So most of James Island's arms were not available to throw in Wednesday's game. But most of River Bluff's guys who were not eligible to go in Tuesday's game were back. And including that was Dalton Corley. Dalton Corley has been their mainstay arm for a long time. He ended up, as it turned out, ended up winning his 20th game at River Bluff, which was a school record. But they were able to turn to him when other guys were, you know, when it looked like it was going to be a bullpen game and maybe, you know, just a complete shootout. He restored order pretty quickly and was able to get some zeros and give River Bluff, obviously, an opportunity to get back in that game. And, boy, it kept on. So then James Island goes ahead again. So they're up 10-9. Walker Godwin hits a two-run homer in the bottom of six for River Bluff to put them up 11-10. But, you know, that's not over because 9-1 and 2 are looming, right? So the key at-bat, I think, of that top of the seventh turned out to be – there's Coach Jolly calling me right there. Top of that seventh was that getting that nine-hole guy ahead of Ostergaard and Marchand. So got a one out, a two outs, and then they put on Marchand, which now, of course, you know, that represents the tying run. So now he's on first base. And that's when, I'm sure if you've seen any of the footage, the final play happened, which was debatable in terms of how it was rendered. But there was more that I found out yesterday than just the ball over the left fielder's wall play at the plate. You're showing it right now. What's interesting, and you can't see in the video, is there's a huge collision at first base between the batter runner rounding first. As soon as he steps on the bag, he hits the first base umpire who's rotating down to home plate. And if you notice, that home plate umpire was vacating. He was going to pick up a possible play at third. He has to rotate down. See, he's late arriving or just in time arriving. Typically, you want a guy stationed right there ready for that play at the plate. But he noticed that the first base umpire and the batter runner were laying down like bowling pins at first base. So he reversed direction, came back, and was able to actually put his eyes on the play. Can you imagine? I mean, can you imagine that play happening? All of a sudden, there's no home, you know, no umpire in the circle to make a call, and you've got three other umpires, one laying at first base, and the other two, you know, looking at the home plate umpire and having to make that call. So kudos to that home plate umpire for recognizing there was a man down and getting back and getting it, somewhat in position to be able to make a call on that bang-bang play. It was crazy.
I asked the question about environment at Duncan Park earlier. Obviously, your statement right there says it all. It was crazy. It's a bang-bang play. You can see it on your face. What's the reaction in the ballpark? Because of the, you have to think about, you talk about momentum, kind of the pent up emotions of this game. You can feel not that River Bluff is tight, but you can almost feel that you can't exhale until this one's over, right? Because of the comeback that's been mounted, and here it all culminates in such a bang bang play. What was the explosion inside this park when that happened?
Well, it was nuts. The anticipation of that time after everything had happened. Now, you got six innings of just nuts. I mean, you got every kind of play possible, you know, pitching changes and just, you know, coaches trying to match wits and pitch running and pitch hitting and just trying to mix and match to put yourself in a position to have some success and give yourself a chance to win late. You know, so really going to that top of the seventh, well, first of all, the crowd was unbelievable. There, if you've been to River Bluff, you've got the huge – press box for the football field in right field of the baseball ballpark. And so, you know, that's got, it's covered in people across the roof. And of course the stairwells leading up to it down the right field line, the bowl of seating had been packed before the game. So yeah, there, I don't know how many people were there. It was nuts. And you got two fan bases. They traveled, you know, some of their students, River Bluff students are, you know, hovering and, came out full force and really created when student fan bases show up in droves and really, really drive the meter of excitement. It just makes it a lot more fun. The atmosphere is far greater for these kids. It's more fun for me when I'm sitting at a game like that, because a lot of times we sit at games that there is not a lot on line, might not be a lot of players on the field. Sometimes we see some bad baseball. So you see the bad baseball to reward yourself with nights like this and atmospheres like this. But as you went into that, as you go into that bottom, or excuse me, top of seven, I mean, Marshawn had already had four hits. He's hitting pitches that, you know, you try to pitch around him. He hits those two. He finds gaps with balls you're not supposed to swing at. Really special player, which is why there were probably 8 or 10 pro scouts in to see him. He's going to be a high round pick. But the decision to put him on just, you know, builds anticipation because, you know, the guy that's hitting right behind him, he's really good too. And of course, you know, true to form, he pops one off of the fence and it turns into a relay that has to be executed perfectly. It's got to be picked up at the base of the wall. You got to hit the cutoff man. He's got to catch it, get rid of it quickly. And there has to be an incoming throw to the plate and another catch tag with a very good runner coming around third base, barreling in with only one goal in mind. And that's to score and get the home plate. And, you know, again, I've seen the play several times. It's debatable whether he was there or he wasn't, but the umpire rendered he was out. And with that, you get a game three. But no, the atmospheres, you know, that's what I love about these games. And even in the smaller schools, you know, the town shut down and it's really about the baseball. It's about the community. And these kids that go to academies and certainly all the stuff you do during the summer and all that's extremely important. But when you get a chance to play for your school and for your community and they show up And there's, you know, there's kids whose parents went to these schools, and it just runs deep. And then we get a chance to make a run like this. And, you know, when you get a chance to look at these kids and if you've got a son that's getting a chance to do this, it's just always fun to be able to watch your children, be able to play in ball games like this and be able to watch these kids play in games like this, because it really, the more of these moments that they can stack in their playing career, it's just going to build more character for them as they go on in life, in my opinion, because of the, you know, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. You see it, you know, in close plays at the plate. You see some pictures and some videos that came flooding in. Obviously, there's the opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of how you react, depending on which side of it you're on. But just sitting there and having a front row seat to all these games, and certainly that one right there, it was really special. You see a lot of games that you forget. You know, we obviously live through a lot of days that aren't memorable either. And then there's some that you never will forget. And that was certainly one. And all it did was buy them another day for River Bluff. It bought them another bus ride down to the island to fight the Nats. And that'll be on now Saturday at 1:00. Two pretty good games and certainly an epic game too that's been chronicled. You can see it all over social media, what happened from the homers that got them back into it to obviously the ending on that final play.
I think it's incredible. And I want to give credit quickly to Stephen Skrocky, Skrocky Sports, because that was a fantastic angle that he had. And we showed that, and we'll retweet that. And of course, you've got a lot on X as well at Diamond Prospect. So we're certainly going to retweet that. And you'll continue to, you and Corey Fravel are going to continue to be all across the state. I wanted to ask you about a couple of players quickly, if we could. We haven't talked about Airport yet, but Airport's playing for the right to get into the state championship. They've got a right-hander who I think just threw and helped them defeat Hartsville, Daniel Butts. Now, I don't know what his what kind of prospect Butts is, but you can tell us about him. He's 9-1 with an ERA under 3. So what do you know about Butts, and what do you know about Airport right now?
Well, what's interesting is Butts, first time I saw him, I thought he had a lot of juice in his bat. So I had him in first as a – I had never seen him pitch. But I had him in as a prospect offensively, and then found out he had a really good arm. Now, last year, from what I understand, he was a guy that had a good arm but was strike zone challenged. This year, he's really not had an issue throwing strikes at all. In fact, he's had a lot of success, as you mentioned. I've gotten to see him once this spring, and it was at the Forest Acres Classic where I saw you. He's had a tremendous spring. He's been in the zone, and he's had a lot of success. He's pretty much 85 to 87, is one of those guys that throws it over the plate and allows defense to play behind him. I think his punch outs are about one per inning. I haven't looked at his stats here this last week or so, but just looking at it last night, obviously he threw well and then was able to give way to a couple guys in the bullpen in a game that was, you know, it was an elimination game for the defending champs in 4A. And so, Airport's extremely well coached. And so is Hartsville. So that's obviously no surprise to me, actually, that they had the seasons that they've had. This is going to come down to a decisive game 3 as well. But Butts followed by, and they got Cash, and they got Rylan Bullis, who's also been extremely good. Both as a two-way guy. He's been big for them on the mound. Another guy that just really competes, mid-80s arm, that just gets after hitters. You can't measure the heart of a lion, right? And they've got some kids that are just blue-collar, hard-nosed, just want to beat you type players. And so does Hartsville. They've on down the list of guys that they've thrown in some of their position players, Jay Nackinson, Bryce Oliver. Those are guys that have been real good for them on the mound. Anderson, just on down the list, just some guys that's a good blue collar series, from the coaches all the way down to the guys that are taking the field. So no surprise that one's going to a game 3 either.
This is awesome. Austin, we've got to let you go. And listen, we want you to tell Coach Jolly we said hello and congratulations to him. We teased him last time about how he needs to thank all the feeder schools because they're supplying him some pretty good talent. But as we let you go, tell us where you and Corey will be. And also, go ahead and tell us about your website and what you guys are going to be doing maybe as these championships wrap up and then into the summer.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Smitty. Yeah, Corey Welch and I, we go as much as we can go. I know that tomorrow with some other some game 3s going on and some of the 2A and 3A, 1A also, cranks up in their state championship finals on Saturday. We haven't exactly devised where our guys are going to be just yet. Still trying to put a lid on last night and everything that happened. Then a little bit later this morning, we'll reverse direction, try to get pitching matchups, find out if these coaches will give us their pitching starting pitchers. A lot of them close to best with that kind of stuff. But I will be at James Island tomorrow at 1 o'clock for that game three of the 5A Division One. But there are certainly some other good options for people to choose. Now, yeah, certainly go to our website for any covers that we've got. You can go to our Twitter X. You can go to our Instagram. We'll have anything that we see, we'll be able to post on there. But also on our website, thediamondprospects.com, we'll do breakdowns of what we saw, certainly prospect information and things of that nature. But the scoreboard, the schedule is on there. So as we get game times, as we get starting pitchers, all that will fill out. We'll have that on there by the end of this morning. And so that's one place where people, if they're trying to figure out what's near me that I can get to, or like I had last night, I got some options. Where do I want to go? Maybe that'll help you break some ties. And then, of course, as the season's, we'll be out and about next week, wherever the state championship series take us. And then, of course, we go right into all of our postseason award stuff for all the different classifications, our Diamond Kings, we do Gold Glove Award, we do Dirty Dude Award, which is a pretty cool one to be able to win. That's basically who's the grinder, who's the guy that just gets after the Dirty Dude. We'll do an all academic team and all that. We'll have our summer showcases coming up in 2 weeks, which I have done hardly anything with those two events because the baseball has kept us up real late at night and kept us busy, but that's okay. That's why we do this. And then, of course, after that, we'll have all of our updated player rankings and the Palmetto Games invite list will be coming out before the end of June. So, yeah, we don't rest until December, Smitty.
Hey, incredible. All right, we'll let you go, Austin. But also, don't forget, there's going to be a new coach at the University of South Carolina, which means a whole new relationship and players that will be forging that relationship with his new assistants. So you've got a summer ahead of you. Let's just put it that way.
Personally, I look forward to them going in and making that decision when that is, because I end up having the same conversation about 100 times a day, particularly when a certain couple of names are involved that I've got close ties to. The questions continue to abound. So I'll have a little more time on plate whenever South Carolina decides who their new man is, for sure.
Oh, Austin, thanks so much, man. We'll be right back in touch. We're going to have – you've asked me a couple times. We're going to have Coach Bonnet on with us from River Bluff, win or lose against James Island. We're going to reach out back out to him. And we really appreciate you, Austin. We'll be in touch.
Sounds great. Good talking to you guys.
Yep. Austin is the best. Corey Welch is the best. They're the best at Diamond Prospects. They do so much for us and help us deliver what we do on air. Rob, we got to take a break. When we come back, you'll take center stage. What have you been seeing as you have been going around and catching football practices in the spring? Rob Williams is going to, as I said, get the spotlight on him. I'll pick his brain about football when we come back in our fourth quarter segment here on Four Quarter Friday. Friday, wrapping things up. Rob, quickly, by the way, that was awesome with Austin Alexander. We encourage anybody to please tell a friend, if you like interviews like that, to subscribe to Four Quarter Friday on YouTube. We want to make sure that everybody that is being mentioned, if you just care about high school athletics, those are the kinds of interviews and content that we plan to bring you all summer long, all through the fall. We've got fourquarterfriday.com coming your way. So there's going to be a home for all of this. It's going to be really easy to get to and share. Rob, it's crunch time. 2-minute warning now. But tell us quickly what you have seen, what you've been able to put your eyes on in the last couple of weeks in football. What's caught your attention out there on the gridiron?
No doubt. We'll run the hurry up here. And great reminder, fourquarterfriday.com coming in partnership with On3 and Rivals very, very soon. And we're excited to have that for you, where you'll get more information about this. The Four Quarter Friday spring tour has been on the move. And when the website launches, we'll have write-ups of these spring practice reports that we have from teams around the state. You know, Smitty, I mentioned this before. It's an absolutely loaded year at running back in this state. I've had a couple of coaches tell me they don't know that they've seen this many backs, this many quality backs across the state as there are in 2027. But I'm beginning to see the next wave of them as well. Okay, Braden Bolts at Crestwood is a 2029 prospect who has, I think, 29 offers. He's getting attention from schools like Ohio State and Notre Dame. A ton. Everybody has given this kid a look. Everybody's calling about him. Somebody to definitely keep an eye on. He is in the backfield there with 2027 prospect Calvin Wofford, who's also a college prospect. So that two-headed monster at Crestwood down in Sumter is one to keep an eye on. I was at Chapin this week as well. You talk about 2029 prospects. Harper Ellerby, a running back there who played a little bit of slot before. He's played some defense. He looks like Will Shipley. Okay, so that's just – and that's the best way I can describe it. I think he's going to get some attention at the Power 4 level. He's a freshman right now. He's be a rising sophomore. And you can look at his build and does not look like it. So a couple of these younger backs are starting to catch attention as we continue to follow the journey of the 2027s. Obviously, the top names in the state there are Trey Segarra and Aiden Gibson. But then you have guys like Ty Phillips at Irmo. I mentioned Calvin Wofford at Crestwood. You got the kid at Spartanburg. There are just backs on and on that we go that we'll be continuing to watch where they're going to go. We've got some commitments already. We covered Aiden Gibson going to Penn State. Some of these other ones are still a developing process to figure out where some of these guys are headed. The tour has been great. We've got one more week. We got a couple of little stops here left in spring practice. Some teams that are wrapping up next week, Smitty. So we'll cover those as well, and then we'll get into summer, which will be a lot of fun as well.
Okay, we'll wrap things up here quickly. Yes, 7-on-7s and showcases and all sorts of things ahead for us. We're going to roll into Inside the Gamecocks here on the network with Jamie Bradford, with JB. That's coming up next. Will Crow will join the show, give baseball thoughts. The Gamecocks are out hunting for a new baseball coach. That's it for us. Be sure to stay with us, however, both on YouTube and X at 4QuarterSC. We'll cover it all, girls soccer, boys soccer, softball, baseball, and all that's going on in football and beyond in recruiting and everything else that we can across the Palmetto State. That's it for us. For Rob Williams, I'm Matt Smith. Inside the Gamecocks is next.